WMFO, Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there's no due date, tolls, or expiration here in the grand hour. Good morning. It's the... my notes aren't even ready. 25th of October, 2023. For the first half of the show, I'm going to play a BBC broadcast of The Goon Show. I think I've played one of these before on the show. It was an ensemble troupe composed of with Peter Sellers. This one's called The Curse of Frankenstein. This had an original air date of the 27th of January, 1958. Thanks.
This is the BBC. Ladies and gentlemen, we present The Curse of Frankenstein.
Blast!
We present the play of the week. Inside soon. My heart's on the Highlands, but my feet are in Bombay. Or I was a victim of a terrible explosion.
It was 1883, and the Laird Red Harry Burke lay dying on his bed, shot in the chanters.
We were nacht der nail in you, an nacht der hrlen meal in you. Andy? Andrew?
Aye, my laird, aye. Take it easy, the new.
Oh, dear, I've no got long to go than you.
Here, here, now wait. Have a wee drop of Reg Agony whiskey.
Aye, 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 aye. Pour it down my throat, lad. Oh, that's better. Andy, we'll get the will out and let my family in. Had a good life. Now, are you all here, lads? Now, my lads, as you all know, I'm leaving the castle and 1 million pounds.
Oh, oh. Oh, my little Scottish daddy, I love you, I love you. 1 million pounds, oh, okay, man. It's a warm luck, man, luck, knock, 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 knock,
knock, knock, knock, knock, knock, knock, knock, knock, knock, knock, brown paper kilt.
My name is, I am your old son, Jock McMariotti. Oh, Scottish type man. Oh, needle, needle, oh, needle, oh, needle, oh, Macau. £1 million, Macau.
Must have been that terrible weekend in Brussels, you know. Andy, read the will.
Let me clear my throat first. Wait a minute. Right. I, Laird Red Harry McBurk, being of partial sound mind, leave my fortune to the first Scotsman to reach the South Pole and play the bagpipes there.
Great pipe! Which dustbin are you in?
The one with the TV aerial on top.
Listen, £1 million goes to the first man to play the bagpipes at the South Pole.
Curses. Neither of us can play the confounded instrument.
Ah, but we can learn.
No man has ever learned to play the instruments.
I don't wish to know that, but think of what we could do with all the money.
Yes, for a start, I could have you painlessly destroyed.
Ow!
And again.
Ow!
That's your pair of owls complete for the day.
That's nothing like a pair of owls for power.
To continue. Greenslade, would you read my part, dear boy? I'm rather tired, sad now.
Right. There's only one man living who has that much fat on him.
I said that.
Yep. You said, I know the man. It's Neddy Seagoon.
Neddy Seagoon. I wonder what he's doing now.
I've been wondering when I'm going to land in the show. That's what I've been wondering. It's me, folks, Neddy! Well done, well done, well done, little down, little down, little down.
Where are you at the moment, Neddy?
At Brandon House.
Which one are you?
Me.
Come, Moriarty. Follow that whoosh.
I've been in Rotten House for 89 years now. How long have you been in residence in Rotten House?
I was born here, Sir Beerbum. I've never done a day's work in my life. Here's my OBE to prove it.
Oh. How proud your mother must be of your robe.
Yes. Of course I have a private income.
A private income? Where from, Larry?
The labor exchange. Oh. Quick! Into the bath chairs. It might be worth.
Come in, sir.
Are you Neddy Seagoon?
Yes, but I'm too old at the work. I've always been delicate. Since I fell off the top of Mount Everest.
What were you doing up there?
Fishing.
Fishing 29,000 feet above sea level?
Well, I had a long line. You get it, a long line? Ahem.
Inmates, I am here to offer one of you work.
Ah.
We are offering £1,000 for a man to play the bagpipes. Thank you. Now, who can we interview first?
A long voice. Oh!
We interview Jock McGilvray.
Thank you.
wasn't bagpipes, that was a nose. I'm your man, I'm fit. Feel the muscles on these teeth. I can play the pipes.
All right, Nettie, all right. Listen carefully. These five envelopes, numbered 1 to 10, contain your instructions. Open one at a time.
I see. You will go to 29 New James Street. Right. Taxi!
Yes, mate, where to?
That's my affair. You just drive.
All right. That'll be 4 and 3, mate.
What for?
A new starter.
So you want a starter, eh? Right on your mark, get set, go! Fiend Seagoon. And so saying, I entered 29 New James Street. Anybody in?
You are. Men. It's a man chained to a bed.
Good morning.
Morning. Good morning. Morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good
morning.
So very, very pleasant. Just a moment while I open envelope number 2. Yes. It says, I must buy a South Pole expedition.
What size, sir?
Well, I take a 6 7/8 stomach.
Double X, Min.
Double X coming up, buddy. There you are, buddy. Modern buddy.
Try this blizzard on for size.
Just a bit. This blizzard's got a hole in the trousers. The wind's getting in.
You haven't done the zip-up, sir.
Oh, that's better. Next, I want a pair of Arctic bagpipes.
Yes, I have the very thing.
The pistol.
They are filled with antifreeze.
I knew her will. Envelope number 3 says...
You will form your expedition up on the Falkland Islands, 3,000 miles south of the Antarctic.
Right. Goodbye.
Up. He's fallen in the water.
Meantime, in the Antarctic, a certain person claiming to be of Scottish blood has joined in the chase.
Me bagpipes are on fire.
Fire! Fire!
I heard the call. Stand aside. Unrolls hose. Squat, squat, squatty, squatty. What's the matter back there? Are you pumping?
Yeah, I'm pumping my mind. There's no water. Oh, somebody clap the nose.
Oh, I didn't really need it, folks.
No, I've been pumping, but there's no water. There never is any water. That's a horror, does it?
Oh, did you say the Sahara Desert?
Oh, I said the Sahara Desert.
I thought it was too hot for the Antarctic. Captain Idiot?
Yes, sir?
You fool, you. We're 32,000 miles off course already.
Well, nobody's perfect.
You naughty, nitty, nutty gentleman, you. Your compass must have been faulty.
Faulty? Oh, I can't understand it. It was a perfectly Christmas cracker I got it out of.
But Was there a guarantee with it?
Oh, yes, it said, question, when is a door not a door? Answer, when it's a jar.
Well, you know, a guarantee like that cannot easily be dismissed. True, true, true. However, I shall try. Guarantee dismissed.
Meantime, Seagoon reached the Falklands on board an ice floe. Ice floe? Gad, how I love that woman.
Oh, dear. I can't see a foot in this blizzard. Mrs. Sprigg, hold yours up.
Come on, Jim. Come on, Jim. Oh. You don't have to know this, Bob.
What's the position?
Standing up, Jim.
Where's the compass?
Oh, Jim. Oh, Jim. I haven't got one, Jim. Oh, Jim.
I'll order a Jim, you with a club in a minute. Here, pull this cracker.
Oh, look, a compass. And a paper hat.
Give it to me. I'm leader of the expedition. There. How do I look?
Oh, Jim.
Cheeky. Oh.
He knows, you know. When you go dancing, you seem so entrancing. They call you the belle of the ball. When you go back.
I don't like clubbing, Jim.
Now let's get on to the South Pole. Let's check the compass. 91 degrees north, 87 degrees west.
Where are we?
Lost. What? I have the exact position of it.
Oi there, Marno. The love, the nerve.
The ship and the captain's name is Tom. Ahoy, who are you?
We're the Woolwich Free Ferry.
You're 50,000 miles from Woolwich. Your compass must be wrong.
I got it out of Christmas cracker.
I must get a new compass. Could you take me back to England?
Have you got a ticket?
No, who do I get it from?
Ticket office on Woolwich Bureau.
Follow the boat again.
Seven years later.
Well, I tell you, if he ain't back another 10 minutes, I'm not waiting no longer. My dinner's getting cold. Ah, here he come now. Get on, my darling.
Darling, Fred.
Did you get your ticket, my darling?
No, it was half day early closing. Hey! Yes, well, you pay for this!
How much?
£3 down and £3 up!
Oh!
All hope, official announcement. Slowly, oh so slowly, Nettie's ice floe floated near the South Pole.
As we near the South Pole, we run into Bloodlock at his party.
You silly explorer, you. Didn't you see my indicator sticking out?
I'm sorry, sir. I was conducting Beethoven's Fifth Symphony and I wasn't listening.
Good luck.
I say, those bottles are yours. What race are they?
The 330. You want to place any bets?
I'm sorry, all my currency is frozen.
Oh.
But what are the short ones without beards?
Those are Eskimos.
And what are the ones with beards?
Those are Eskimos who haven't shaved.
I see. But why do only half of them shave?
So that they can tell the difference. Can we have music to this bit, please? Thank you.
Tell the difference from what?
Between those with beards and those without.
I don't like this, Jim.
Shut up!
Shut up!
Shut up!
Shut up, Jim!
What are you thinking, fool? To avoid all this confusion, why don't the ones without beards grow beards?
Well, that'd be rather unfair.
Unfair? Why?
The one without beards are women, you see. That's how they tell the difference, you understand.
This is ridiculous. I've never known of families growing beards to differentiate between the sexes. Have you, Eccles?
Oh, sure. It happened in my family.
When I was young, I couldn't tell the difference between my mother or father. So, my father made my mother grow a beard.
Ah. And you were able to tell the difference?
Nope.
Why not?
My father had a beard, too.
I don't like coming here.
What does the third envelope say?
I say you're 2 miles from the peril.
Did you hear that, Bradlock?
Yes, I did. A man doing an impression of an envelope.
Major, Major, look, a polar bear is approaching.
My goodness, yes, and he must be very old. It's gone white with age.
No, he's very weak.
Oh, that's what it is. He's coming this way.
Don't worry, I've got a gun.
Shoot, Seagoon, shoot.
Okay, I've shot Seagoon. What now?
You fool.
Okay, I was only pretending to shoot. I wasn't really shooting. I was going, bang, 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 bang. Down goes the polar bear. Down goes the polar bear. Bang, 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 bang. Click. Click? I must have run out of bullets. No.
Thank you. Oh, I don't like this. Funny, Jim.
You idiots. While you've been playing naughty games, the bear's escaped in a taxi. We'll camp here for the night. Tomorrow, the South Pole!
You're asleep, Echo.
What?
You're asleep, Echo.
Yeah.
You're a man of the world, ain't you, Echo? Echo?
Empty your bottle?
You ever been to the South Pole?
No, but I once jumped off Beachy Head.
Oh, how nice for you, Echo.
Well, I didn't want to do it, Bottle, but a man paid me to commit suicide for him.
Did he die then?
No, that would have trouble. When I got back up top, he was still alive.
What did he do?
He asked for his money back.
And did you?
Well, I had to. I went to a doctor and the doctor said I wasn't dead.
Oh, Bert, don't you worry, Echo. Being dead isn't everything in life.
Being dead isn't everything in life.
Modern cap music.
It is meant to indicate a disaster. During the night, there was a crack in the ice, and the sledge with the bagpipes fell in. All this way for nothing!
Look, the South Pole is only over there by that bus stop. Can't we make some bagpipes?
No, we haven't any plans. We need hollow pipes. In any case, we need to drill holes in them.
Well, I can drill holes. Holes left and quick, Matt!
The holes march away. All is lost.
No, don't worry, Ned. me and Bottle got a set of bagpipes.
Yes, we put hot water in them and use them as a water bottle.
And here's Heather with the weather.
Well, it's beautiful out there, sunny and 75, almost a little chilly in the shade. Now, let's get a read on the inside of your car. It is hot. You've only been parked a short time and it's already 99 degrees in there. Let's not leave children in the back seat while running errands. It only takes a few minutes for their body temperatures to rise, and that could be fatal.
Cars get hot fast and can be deadly. Never leave a child in a car. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Thank you, NHTSA and the Ad Council, for that FCC obligation. Yeah, I had to cut the Goon Show off there a little bit. It was too early for that island humor without enough coffee. I can finish the last 4 or 5 minutes of that. at a later time. My name is Arthur, and you're listening to The Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. Sticking with the cutting of the proverbial jack-o'-lantern here. I'm going to play an episode of Suspense. This one is called The Flesh Peddler. Had an original air date at the 8th of April, 1957. Thanks for listening.
Suspense. And the producer of radio's outstanding theater of thrills, the master of mystery and adventure, William N. Robeson.
One of the greatest pleasures we find in this business of keeping you in suspense is the discovery of new talent and of unusual story twists. In what you're about to hear, we think we have combined both. The twist? You'll never guess it, no matter how familiar you are with that mystical literary device, the ventriloquist dummy. And the new talent? Two young men. Bob Jurn, whose first radio play this is, and DeForest Kelly, a bright new luminary in the Hollywood firmament who is presently being seen as Morgan Earp in Gunfight at OK Corral. Put them all together, and you have a strange half hour ahead. Listen. Listen then as DeForest Kelly stars in Flesh Peddler, which begins in exactly 1 minute.
Smoke Kent with the Micronite filter.
Actually, Kent cigarettes here, these filters they're talking about actually contained asbestos. How do I know that? From asbestos training at my work. So, that's really good advertising campaign there for Kent, isn't it? Thanks.
It is the mild cigarette. It's got the freshest, cleanest taste yet. It is the mild Kent cigarette. Smoke Kent with the Micronite filter.
And now, Mr. DeForest Kelly in Flesh Peddler, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
I'm an agent, a booking agent. Flesh peddlers, we are sometimes unkindly called. But I don't peddle flesh. I sell talent. Singers, musicians, nightclub acts. And I'm pretty good at it. I've got an instinct for talent. When I find a new act that's really got it, I go after it until it's mine. Only the ventriloquist team of Wilson and Oliver, I wish I'd never heard of them. Then I could sleep better nights. My wife and I were vacationing in the Catskills last summer, and the night before we were due back in New York, a carnival pulled into town. Now, I don't want to sound like a snob, but to me, the carnival is the lowest form of show business. I hate them. But my wife, Gloria, loves them. Since I love Gloria, we went to the carnival.
Pete, isn't it exciting?
It's just cheap noise.
Oh, I wish it had come to town sooner.
I wish it hadn't come till tomorrow.
Oh, come on, Pete. You might even find some new talent.
Here?
Why not?
Freaks are for sideshows, honey, not class spots.
You never can tell. A bearded lady might go great at the Coca.
I can tell.
Right here for the wonder of the Midway. Hey, the one and only Alexander Wilson and his lovable little dummy pal, Oliver. Hey, you've seen ventriloquists before, you say. Uh-huh. Hey, but you've never seen anything to equal Wilson. The remarkable Wilson and Oliver. Hey, don't pass his by, friends.
Pete, let's go in.
Oh, but ventriloquist, a dime a dozen.
Come on, I want to see him.
Honey, you've seen 100 just like him.
Well, maybe he's 1 in 100.
All right. We pushed through into the small tent and took our places on the hard, uncomfortable benches. Wilson was already seated on the platform, a typical childishly dressed dummy on his lap. He was a man in his 50s, I'd say, with the saddest face I've seen in 15 years of show business. When the people were in, he suddenly sprang the dummy to life.
Shut the doors, shut the doors. All present accounted for, Mr. Wilson.
You're sure, Oliver?
Sure.
Well, then, say hello to the people.
Hello to the people.
Oh, now, come, Oliver. You can do better than that.
I can?
Yes.
Well, you ought to know.
The routine was awful. Dull, time-worn. But for some reason, this Wilson fascinated me. He had a talent, all right. His handling of the dummy was amazingly accurate. As the act went on, I began to think that Wilson was even better than the barker had said he was. And he was going over with the house. Wilson had Oliver sing while he himself smoked a cigarette. After a few more gag routines and a couple of neat tricks, the performance was over. And I knew I had to sign the act. I parked Glory on the merry-go-round and then went looking for Wilson. I walked back of the midway through the maze of painted trailers that were home to Kearney people. Suddenly the door to one of them flew open and a woman stepped out. A neatly trimmed beard covering her chin.
What do you want?
I'm looking for Alexander Wilson.
Wilson? Why?
I'm a talent agent from New York. I'd like to talk to him.
Agent?
Yes, Peter Harris, and you're...
Bernice, it's on the poster.
Oh, yes, of course, Bernice.
What do you want with Alexander Wilson?
I told you,
Who is it, Bernice?
Talent agent. Never mind, go back in.
Agent?
I'm looking for Mr. Wilson.
Oh, well, I'm Arthur. You caught my knife act. You know, I could pin a fly to a penny of 40 feet.
Don't mind him, flesh peddler. Go away. Go home. Agents are no good for us. Leave Wilson alone.
And you know, like I could put out a candle flame with a penknife at 30 feet, Agent Man.
Arthur? Go back in.
Maybe he could sell my act.
Go in!
All right. Wilson's in trailer 17, Agent Man. Hey, if you ever need a
good... Shut up, Arthur! Shut up! Get in there. Forget what he said. Arthur is... Well, he isn't quite bright. You know what I mean?
Yeah. What's so wrong about seeing Wilson?
There are plenty of acts like his. You don't need him.
Well, you've got my curiosity going now, Bernice.
I hadn't intended that. But forget your curiosity. And go home. Now.
Why?
Believe me, flesh peddler, you will thank me for this advice someday.
Which is trailer 17? I couldn't see why Bernice was so huffy. It was none of her business anyway. I roamed through the trailers with my cigarette lighter held high, looking for number 17. Finally, I found it. A small aluminum antique set apart from the rest, with a pre-war Chevy attached to it. The trailer was completely dark. Mr. Wilson?
What is it?
I'm Peter Harris. I'd like to talk to you.
What do you want?
Well, I'm an agent, Mr. Wilson. I'd like to see you.
Just a minute. Yes?
I just caught your act, Mr. Wilson. I enjoyed it very much.
Thank you.
I'd like to do business with you.
Do business?
Here's my card. My office places acts on all four networks and all the principal nightclubs.
I'm afraid it's out of the question. I never play nightclubs.
But...
I never play nightclubs, Mr. Harris.
Well, could I come in for a moment, explain my setup? Maybe when you...
No, forgive me for appearing short, but I'm not interested in any offer you have to make.
To begin with, I can get you $200 a week.
Oh, excuse me.
$250?
No, I'm very tired, if you'll pardon me.
Okay, Mr. Wilson, but will you tell me why you want to stay with a two-bit freak show when you could make a small fortune working with me?
No. No, I'm afraid I can't tell you. Good night.
I suppose I should have forgotten all about it, but I'm not used to the brush off. Like I say, when I see an act I want, I go after it until I get it. And then there was something about Wilson's reluctance that wasn't somehow on the level. As I walked back toward the bright lights and the noise of the midway, a figure stepped from behind one of the darkened trailers.
So you saw him?
Oh, Bernice. Yes, I saw him.
And are you satisfied?
Not at all.
Just more curious.
Exactly.
Only fools push their noses into other people's business, flesh peddler.
Harris is the name.
And only fools get themselves and other people into trouble.
Trouble? All I wanted was to offer him a nice fat job, $250 a week, and he slammed the door in my face.
Alexander Wilson cannot leave this carnival.
Why?
You don't know, Mr. Harris, and you're not going to know.
Know what?
Stop asking foolish questions. Your curiosity can do a great deal of harm.
Bernice, where does the carnival go from here?
Really, Mr. Harris, you don't expect me to...
Look, I can ask any one of the barkers or setup men.
Ask them then.
All right, I will.
But remember, Flesh Peddler, if you follow us to Poughkeepsie, I'll...
Poughkeepsie?
Very well, now you know. But if you follow us and try to see Wilson again, you are a fool.
In just a moment, we continue with... Suspense.
Who says you can't have your cake and eat it? With our vast network facilities at your disposal, you can hop in the car and get away from it all and still not miss out on any of the exciting entertainment you've been enjoying regularly at home. The latest news, our daytime dramas, the music and comedy shows that fill each evening with joy are all available to you whether you're perched at the top of the highest mountain or are dangling a toe in the edge of the sea. The six dramatic shows that follow each other on CBS Radio every Sunday bring Broadway and Hollywood to you whether you're drifting downstream on a barge or flying high in a sports plane built for two. And the biggest variety shows can be enjoyed to the hilt on a pocket-sized transistor as well as the huge console radio in a luxurious country hotel. Summer is a time for fun outdoors. Summer is a time for travel. With CBS Radio at your side, summer is a time for top-flight entertainment, no matter where you happen to be, no matter what else you happen to be doing.
And now...
You're actually listening to WMFO Medford.
We continue with the second act of Flesh Peddler, starring Mr. DeForest Kelly. A tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Gloria and I drove back to Manhattan the next morning. And 2 days later, I hopped a Poughkeepsie local out of Grand Central. The more I thought about Wilson, the more of a challenge he became. I wanted him for my list, but more than that, I wanted to find out what was behind Bernice's strange attitude. Now I wish I'd forgotten about the whole thing. In Poughkeepsie, I checked into a hotel, took a cab to the carnival grounds at the edge of town. It was late afternoon as I pulled up in front of the gaudy tents and booths waiting for the evening crowds. I made my way through the cluttered midway, looking for Wilson's aluminum trailer and hoping I wouldn't run into Bernice.
Hello. Agent man. Agent man.
Hello.
Hello.
Remember me, Arthur the knife thrower? I can pin a fly to a penny.
Yes, I remember you.
And you've come for me?
What's that?
You come all this way to get me for your agency?
Well, no, I'm afraid not.
Oh. Well, that's all right. I mean, you know, like, I've been giving it a lot of thought, and I don't think I could go with you anyway.
I see.
So I couldn't leave Bernice in the carnival. My sister says carny folk should stay with carny folk.
Your sister?
Bernice.
Oh. Arthur, why is Bernice so... so close-mouthed about Mr. Wilson? She acts as though she's afraid of him.
Us carny folks stick together, see? Like, we don't like other people sticking their noses into our business.
Bernice said that?
Yes.
Arthur, where's Mr. Wilson's trailer?
I don't know.
Oh, come now, Arthur.
Bernice says, you know...
I know. Bernice says too much.
I don't know anything, Agent Man. Well, I have to go practice my knife throwing now. I gotta practice every day, you know?
Well, it was clear Bernice had given Arthur his instructions, and no thanks to him, I finally found Wilson's trailer set off from the rest. Mr. Wilson? Mr. Wilson! The door to the trailer was unlocked, and it swung open at my knock. Wilson obviously wasn't there, but I didn't think he'd mind if I went in and waited. The inside of the trailer was dim and musty. I left the door open to let in what little sunlight the day had left and sat in the lone chair in front of the makeup table. I was just about to reach for a cigarette when I had the feeling that I wasn't alone. I turned slowly in the chair and the back of my neck began to crawl. There on a shabby army cot was Wilson's dummy, propped up against the wall. the steady, unchanging expression of its face with the staring eyes and painted smile grinned back at me. It was weird and uncomfortable to be so close to this lifeless thing, unmoving, wooden, that seemed so real and alive on the platform in the tent. I tried to ignore it, but I couldn't. I looked away, but I could still feel it there, grinning at me in the early evening dimness. When I could stand it no longer, I got up and walked out of the trailer and bumped right into Bernice.
What did I tell you, flesh peddler?
Bernice, I...
What were you doing in there?
Waiting for Wilson.
What did I tell you?
Now look, Bernice, I don't like you or anyone else telling me what I can or can't do. I want to see Wilson again. I'm waiting here.
Come with me, please. I must talk to you privately in my trailer. Sit down.
Well, what's on your mind, Bernice?
I didn't really think you'd follow us.
I told you I'm not easily discouraged.
Mr. Harris, I must warn you again to leave now without seeing Wilson.
I don't think you understand me. I'm used to getting what I go after.
Mr. Harris.
I intend to see Wilson to try to talk him into signing a contract. And you've said so far, all that you've said is go away. Can you give me a good reason for not seeing him? Okay, then why did you insist on dragging me in here?
Mr. Harris, can you assure me your interest in Wilson does not go beyond signing him as a client?
What do you mean?
Your interest in Wilson wouldn't by chance be in his past, his private life, and not in his professional talent.
I never heard of him until I caught his act 3 days ago.
Mr. Harris, I'd hoped I wouldn't have to tell you this. I didn't realize you were so stubborn, but...
Yes?
Well, Alexander Wilson lost his mind many years ago. That doesn't disturb you.
It might, if I believed you, Bernice.
What?
I don't think Wilson's nuts. Apparently something's bothering him. Something big, maybe, but it's not insanity.
I suppose you know Wilson better than I do.
I didn't say that. But a man in my business meets every kind of person there is. The cheats, the phonies, the right guys, the bums.
So?
So you develop an instinct about people. And my instinct tells me Wilson is not insane. You'll have to try something better to scare me off.
Mr. Harris, Wilson thinks he's a murderer.
You are trying to scare me, aren't you?
If that's necessary to protect you and us, yes.
You think he might murder me, too?
I don't mean that. Actually, he never murdered anyone.
Look, Bernice, you don't make sense.
Don't you understand?
No.
I said Alexander Wilson thinks he is a murderer. He thinks he murdered a woman a long time ago. He's lived with this thought for years, nourished it, until he really believes it. It's driven him out of his mind.
Bernice, do you expect me to believe a cockamamie story like that?
It's the truth. So don't you see? The only place for him is here, in the carnival, with his own kind. We understand
him. Well, hasn't anyone tried to help him, to make him realize
that... He is beyond that now. But with us, he's all right. Outsiders disturb him.
You haven't scared me off, Bernice.
You've got to stay away from him!
Why? If anything you've told me is true, it's only half the truth.
It's enough for you to know.
From you, maybe. Perhaps Wilson will tell me the rest.
I've warned you. I will not warn you again.
Oh, Bernice. Oh, hello again, Agent Man.
Hi, Arthur. How's your throwing arm?
Well,
Come in, Arthur. Mr. Harris is just leaving.
Yes. So long, Bernice.
Goodbye, Mr. Harris.
When the trailer door closed behind me, I guessed Bernice would start talking her fury out on Arthur. So I moved around to the small window in the back of the trailer to see if I could learn anything more.
I don't care. I don't even want you to say hello to me. Nothing. Understand?
Well, you know, just saying hello don't hurt, does it, Bernice?
I don't want you to open your mouth in front of that man, even to yawn. I had to lie to him to get him away from here. And I don't want you saying anything to bring him back.
All right, Bernice.
Just pray he goes back to his flesh peddling in New York on that first train.
Just as I thought, Bernice had lied to me. I was determined to get to the bottom of this double talk about Wilson more than ever. This had become more important to me than signing him to the usual 7-year management contract. When I got back to Wilson's trailer, there was a light inside.
Who's there?
It's Peter Harris again.
Who?
Peter Harris. I spoke to you a few days ago and...
What do you want?
I want to talk to you, Mr. Wilson.
Go away.
But I've come all the way from New York.
I must ask you to leave at once.
Look, Mr. Wilson, I'm not a detective. All I wanted when I first met you was to book you into the big time. But now there's something more. I think you need help. You need help badly.
No, you're mistaken.
Can I come in and talk to you?
Oh, good heavens, no.
Well, how about having a drink with me before the show? You look like you could use one.
Please, leave me alone.
Wilson, don't you see what these people are doing to you? For some reason, you're a haunted man, and this carnival is the worst place in the world for
you. Leave me now. Leave me, please. These people are all the help I need. Leave me alone.
I'll be at the hotel overnight. If you change your mind, Wilson, call me. No, I was mad. If he wanted to rot there, going with the carnival until it wasted away, it was no business of mine. I had a few drinks in my room at the hotel. Phoned Gloria that I'd be home the next day. Went to bed. Yes?
Mr. Harris?
Wilson.
Can you meet me right away?
Right away? What time is it?
I don't know. It's after midnight. It's 1:30.
Well, I...
Please. I must talk to you. Can you meet me?
Sure. Okay, where are you calling from?
An all-night drugstore.
Well, where is it?
Wait. No. Not here. Meet me at my trailer.
Okay. It took me longer to wake the cab driver in front of the hotel than it did to get to the carnival grounds. I told the cab to wait and made my way through the darkened tents and trailers to number 17.
Come in.
What's the matter?
Mr. Harris, I've changed my mind. I want to leave with you tonight.
Tonight? Well, what's the...
Harris, you're the first person outside of the carnival I've talked to in more than 2 years. You're the first person I've had the courage to approach.
Go on.
I trust you, Mr. Harris. I can't see why, but I know you'll believe me and help me. I can't live like this anymore.
Sure. Now, just take it.
No. Listen to me. 2 years ago, I killed a woman. Beautiful woman. I loved her more than I've ever loved anything or anyone in my life. When I tried to tell her how much I loved her, she laughed at me. I couldn't stand that laugh.
I understand, Wilson. But that isn't exactly justification.
See, she and her son, she was divorced, were working in this very carnival when I first saw her, back in my hometown in Illinois.
Yes.
I fell in love. Oh, you can call me a rube, anything, but I was in love. I quit my job and followed the carnival for months. That's how much I loved her. And she laughed at me. So I shot her one night. And then I wanted to die, too, and... When I saw her lying there at my feet, I wanted them to hang me, but they laughed at me.
They laughed at you?
The law, the police, they didn't believe I'd done anything. They wouldn't let me give myself up.
Where did you get this crazy idea, Wilson?
It isn't a crazy idea. It's the truth.
Look, lots of people get lots of funny ideas. They think about something they want to do. And they think about it so much that they really believe they've done it.
It was real from the beginning. I killed her. I did. But there was no evidence against me.
Listen, Wilson, you're not making sense.
You listen. He destroyed every bit of evidence so he could punish me himself. The police couldn't arrest or even suspect me.
Who destroyed what evidence, Wilson?
Her son, Oliver.
Oliver?
Yes, Mr. Harris. He's referring to me.
A trick? No. Wilson was too upset to be tricking me. I wheeled at the sound of his voice, and there in the doorway stood Wilson's dummy, Oliver, a small but capable pistol in his hand.
You are just as curious as Bernice said you were, Mr. Harris.
Oliver.
Bernice told me a lot about you. You had to know. And now you do.
No, you're not...
You shocked to learn I'm a midget. I must admit you gave me quite a start when you made yourself at home in the trailer this afternoon.
But that was...
That was me, Mr. Harris. Fortunately, I was already made up for the evening performance.
Mr. Harris hasn't done anything, Oliver. Let him go.
That depends on you. You see, Mr. Harris, Wilson is no ventriloquist. I guess that's obvious now.
It is.
Wilson murdered my mother, and I protected him from the police.
But why?
Why? So the law couldn't punish him. What satisfaction would there have been for me if they just hanged him? He'd been dead in an instant. Is that enough punishment for a man who has murdered your mother? No. He deserved more. And I've given it to him. I've punished Alexander Wilson for years.
Oh, that's right, Mr. Harris. He's held this over my head ever since. Sitting on my lap at every performance, reminding me, night and day, well, I've had as much as I can stand. So go ahead, Oliver. Shoot! Shoot!
Oliver, be sensible. If you pull that trigger, they're here.
They? Bernice and Arthur and everyone else? Bernice already knows, and now I don't care if the others do, too.
For heaven's sake, shoot me! Get it over with! Shoot me, you monster! Shoot me!
With horror frozen on his face, Wilson slid to the floor, dead. Then Oliver turned on me, pupils of his eyes tiny with madness and his frail little body trembling.
I'm afraid this is one act you can't book, Mr. Harris.
Oliver.
You wanted to know everything.
Oliver, now wait.
I'm really sorry for your sake. He asked me to let you go, but under the circumstances.
No.
I'm sorry, Mr. Harris.
It flashed by my head and landed quivering on Oliver's chest, a long gleaming knife blade. And there was Arthur in the doorway of the trailer with Bernice, his face like stone, watching Oliver crumple the little distance to the floor. Slowly the faces of the others appeared in the doorway, silent. The terror I was holding back was a physical pain. I walked to the door and stood looking down at the little body lying awkwardly like a dummy now. A lifeless thing. Unmoving. Staring. Even with the traces of a painted smile grinning up at me.
This couldn't have gone on any longer, I suppose. The police will come now, and at last there'll be an end to it. Go home, flesh peddler, and forget all about us.
I went home, but I haven't forgotten, and I'm afraid I never will.
Suspense. In which DeForest Kelly starred in William N. Robeson's production of Flesh Peddler, written by Robert Duren. Listen. Listen again next week when we return with Pigeon in the Cage, starring Lloyd Bridges. Another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. Supporting Mr. Kelly and Flesh Peddler were D.J. Thompson, Gretchen Connie, Dawes Butler, Howard McNear, and Dick Beals.
How are your brakes? Not the ones in your car. We're sure you keep those in tip-top working order. But how about your own brakes? Are they in working shape? When you're behind the wheel of your car...
That was Suspense. The Flesh Peddler, or Flesh Peddler, had an original air date of the 8th of April, 1957. Elvis, at that point, was a household name. I just have had this thing with going on with ventriloquists the last couple of shows. It works fine if the dummy is actually part of the drama, but not if he's actually one of the radio personalities, which is kind of prevalent in campus, the 30s. 30s and 40s in radio. Anyway, my name is Arthur, and you've been listening to The Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. Sound, Slake, it's coming up next. Thanks for listening.